The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Morning to you. It's Mark Agnew sitting in for Pat Kenny. Now, from a surplus to a massive deficit, dire warnings from the central bank as the coronavirus crisis looks set to put the economy back on its heels for some time to come. To get some insight into these grim financial forecasts, I'm joined by economist and host of the David McWilliams podcast. Obviously, it's David McWilliams. Good morning, David. You're very welcome.
Good,
how are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Safe and sound in my bunker. I ventured out today to come in and give Pat a bit of a break. I presume you're probably not that much different, are you?
I'm down in the bunker, but I was actually talking to somebody online last night about a show many years ago called Mark After Dark.
It was called The Night Train.
You remember that?
I do.
One of my kids doing the Leaving Cert. And he's going mental, as I'd say loads of Leaving Cert students are, not knowing what's going on. And I was talking to a mate of mine, and we were talking about doing the Leaving Cert. He says, do you remember what we used to do? And I said, yeah. He said, we used to just stay up really late and listen to Mark Cagney on RTE2. And I said, interesting. I'm about to talk to him in the morning. So there you go.
Yeah. Mark After Dark was a nickname. That's what it became called. But it was never actually, the programme was actually called the Night Train. I have very fond memories of it.
Indeed. So do we. We were sitting there with our Japanese imported transistors under the covers, listening away, getting a glimpse on the outside world in a very dark Ireland. And Now it looks as if we're going into kind of dark times again, Mark.
Okay, for a lot of us, David, you understand these things. And right at the moment, the vast majority of us are concentrating on the micro. We're concentrating on our homes and our families and the little things and the immediate group that we can take care of. The micro, I suppose. And the macro is going on. And we hear the news on you know, just for example, there, Andrea talking a little earlier about what Pascal Dunne, who said, you know, 8% reduction in GDP, which will result in et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, if this goes on for 6 months, that reduction could be 15%. What does this actually mean?
Well, I think you've got to stand back, Mark, and realise that this is an absolute one-off. And in many cases, and I'd like to reassure listeners, it has actually got nothing to do with the economy. This is a health pandemic. The most important thing now for people like Pascal Donahue is to make sure that they try and put the economy to sleep in a way in which most people, if possible, have the least anxieties about the future. I know that sounds very difficult if you've just lost your job, if you have bills coming in, if you have no income. But that is what I think the government's trying to put in place in terms of wage subsidies, etc. Okay, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But the most important thing is to realize that the economy that existed on the 9th of March, Mark, still exists. It's not an economy that has gone catastrophically wrong. What it is, it's an economy that has been paralyzed by a pandemic. And if we can just keep this in the back of our heads all the time as we go through this, that in terms of the referee, unfortunately, usually the referee in these economic games, Mark, is money, finance, bond markets, exports, all those things. At this time, the referee is a virus, and the referee doesn't understand nor genuflect to economic concerns. So that's why we're looking at a very, very different setup. But to reassure people, when the virus abates, whenever that is, as long as we can make sure that people are not bankrupt, that countries are not bankrupt, that small companies are not bankrupt, then we should look to the future with a certain amount of, I wouldn't say optimism, it's very hard to be optimistic, but guarded confidence that we can get back to somewhere where we were before. Now, it might take a little bit of time, okay? But Mark, what I'm talking about here is I'm looking at the agents of the state, okay? They really have to understand that the long term is dependent on the short term. And by that, I mean what we do now, what we throw now in terms of throwing the kitchen sink at people's incomes, right? In terms of supporting people, in terms of giving people a break, all of that will pay off hugely in the future. The crucial thing is to make sure that this vicious recession, which has been prompted by the virus, which came overnight for most people, does not lead to a depression. And the way you do that, Mark, is you try as much as possible to maintain people's incomes, okay? And the government's doing this through the subsidy. What riles me a little bit this morning is listening to the central bank giving their tuppence halfpenny on the economy without actually standing up and saying, we are an active part of economic policy and we will do our part. I think the central bank has been incredibly unresponsive. They've gone missing in action in a way. They have abdicated. The central bank, I mean, there's
not for the first time, David.
Not for the exactly as they did many years ago when maybe the likes of I was warning about the housing market and too much lending. They were saying, no, everything will be fine. Yeah, this is an institution that I think we need to focus on now. And the reason is the following, Mark, is there's basically two arms to economic policy. There's what's called fiscal policy, which is taxes and spending, which is basically what Pascal Donohue does, right? He either increases taxes, decreases taxes, increases spending, which they've done dramatically over the last week, right? And then the other side of the other arm, so to speak, of fiscal policy, Mark, is what's called monetary policy, which is how the money flows around the economy, how the banks are managed, how you get credit, how you change interest rates, all that sort of stuff, right? That is explicitly the job of the central bank. And in a crisis, it's a bit like a boxer. You've got to fight with both fists. If you fight with one fist tied behind your back, i.e. monetary policy, the central bank being missing in action, then obviously everything is going to be much less effective. So you've got to have all your weapons. It seems to me, Mark, that the central bank has just disappeared from the pitch. And the reason the central bank is important is the following. For many people listening to the show, even if their income can be maintained, right? And everyone's income has fallen off the cliff. Mine has, yours has, everyone's has, okay? Your outgoings every week continue to drag, right? And one of people's main outgoings is their mortgage rate, particularly in that group of the population that bought houses between 2000, let's say, and 2008, okay? That big, significant group of the population. There's a 75 billion worth of mortgages in the Irish economy. So basically the Irish mortgage book, if you aggregated all the bank's mortgages, it's 75 billion. At the moment, Irish people are paying on average about 3.2% of those mortgages on interest every month. The average European is paying half of that, okay? The Irish banks are charging double what the rest of Europe is doing at the moment. The European Central Bank, Mark, last week said, look, we will make available 750 billion euros, which is a phenomenal amount of money. It's about 7% of European GDP to the banks to pass on in free money, in effect. In actual fact, the rate at which the central bank, and you believe this, the European Central Bank is lending to our central bank, okay, is minus 7.5%. So the ECB is saying, we will pay you to borrow money. So what it's saying is all the money is available there. Now, what our central bank should be saying to our banking system, call them into a room, get them into a room today or on a Zoom call and say, listen, lads, that high rate of mortgage, which you've been actually squeezing out of the Irish people, that goes as of from today. You will still make money. The Irish banks will still make money if they reduce Irish mortgage rates to 1%, because the money that's been made available to them by the ECB is at minus 7.5%. So if you see what I mean, they'll still make about 1% profit on mortgages of 1%. Now, the impact on the average person would be the following. For somebody with a mortgage of 300,000 euros a year, or sorry, 300,000 euros in total, that would be a saving every month of about 200 odd euros. So it would mean their rate would come down to about 200 euros a month from about 260 now. These savings are all doable, incredibly doable.
Well, that's a week shopping for a lot of people. You know, we'll feed your family.
All that sort of stuff.
Actually, right? David, I want to ask you about that. The banks were called in by Pascal, and then they came out and said, "Look, yeah, absolutely, we're going to give people a 3-month freeze." And I, like everybody else, had a look at it and realised that there was a sting in it, which was that, "Oh yeah, we'll give you a freeze, but by the way, you're going to start paying that back immediately." So whatever your mortgage repayments were now, if you froze it, they were going to increase. Now, for an awful lot of people, their mortgage, that's maybe the biggest bill they will pay in the month. And a lot of people are put to the pin of the collar to do that. So taking advantage of this 3-month freeze now is all well and good. But you're going to have to pay more on it. Now, it won't be significantly more because it'll be spread over it'll depend on the length of the term that you have left on it. But you will be paying more for your mortgage when you come back after this freeze. So it's a bit of a poison gift, isn't it?
Well, again, you're absolutely right. And the reason I focus on the banking is we're talking about savings, right, which are substantial to people. Okay, we're talking about monthly outgoings reducing during this period. To get back to your point about the interest rate, so it's not an interest rate freeze. What it is the rolling up the rate of interest. So the rate of interest continues to accrue, and then at the end, they're going to plonk on top of this that amount of money that you were supposed to have a freeze on, but they've accumulated it up. So it's kind of, it strikes me as an incredibly ungenerous thing to do. So we've got to stand back and say, okay, who calls the shots here? The shots are called by the central bank. The central bank is now the agent of the European Central Bank, which has said, listen, we're in a massive crisis. We're going to turn up, we're going to tear up all the rule books.
David,
what
given,
annoys me isn't coming in. So what all I'm saying is that every single agent of the state, okay, has got to act together in concert to reduce the pressure on the average worker so that the average worker, A, during this period of what I like to call hibernation, doesn't have the anxiety of collapsing income as well as the anxiety of his or her health, or the health of their family, or particularly in my own case, my own mother.
The ECB immediately recognized, pretty well, they recognized this was going to be huge. Whether they anticipated it being as huge as it was is another matter. But they recognized that it was going to require new thinking, blue sky thinking, this is a whole new ball game. It's a blank sheet. We need to come up with something new. And they said, OK, tell you what, we will pay you to borrow this money.
Yes.
Now, if they were prepared to do that, why did our central bank not say, OK, it comes from the top, we will do the same? Explain that, because that's what people are going to say. Well, if they could do it, why can't we do it here? And what's stopping us from doing that? Is it lack of imagination, or is it people sitting on their hands, or is it people saying, oh, I don't know, if I take that decision, will I get it in the back of the neck 6 months down the road, or will I be held to account, or what is it?
It's funny, I've thought about this for quite a bit, and it's kind of beyond me. I think it's incumbent now on Pascal Donohue to walk across to the new central bank building, on the docks, and sit the new central bank governor down and say, look, you have a responsibility over and above the tight regulation of the banking industry, okay, over and above overseeing the financial industry. You have a responsibility. And the reason you have a responsibility is the following. What if you're sitting there and you're in Bank of Ireland or AIB, the very last thing you want at the end of this crisis, Mark, is a whole load of small companies that have gone bust, okay? Because those small companies, then their loans that you've extended to them over the last 5 or 6 years become bad loans and you start losing money. The way in which you prevent small companies going bust is you protect them during the course of the downturn, the hibernation, the going to sleep period, the COVID paralysis, right? How you do that is you continue to extend credit. You call them in, you say, okay, guys, we know you're in a problem now, but we can do this. Now, the interesting thing, Mark, and this is what really freaks me out, is it strikes me that the people at the top of the central bank don't understand the power they have, okay? There is what I would call the awesome power to print money, okay? And by that, I mean the awesome power of owning the printing presses, being able to manipulate the money supply. The reason, and I speak as a former economist from the central bank many years ago, Mark, the reason central bankers spend all their careers worrying about inflation and credibility and doing the right thing, and what an American central banker said once, our job is to take away the punch just as the party gets going. So basically take away the booze when the party gets going. The job of the central bank is to be cautious. The reason it is that in times of crisis, which come about once in a lifetime right now, you have the credibility to do imaginative things and the people believe you. That's the key. And I fear that our guys, whoever's running the show there, doesn't understand the enormous power they have. Now, if you contrast that, Mark, with the European Central Bank, with Christine Lagarde, who changed her tune very, very quickly, she understands the awesome power of central banking, and she has instructed the Irish Central Bank and all the other central banks in the euro, listen, lads, this is because it's mainly lads, you have discretion to do whatever you want. Go and do it. Save your economy. And the reason the ECB want them to save the economies, the ECB know, exactly as I said before, that if the economies implode over the course of the next 4 or 5 months, the upshot will be a cascading, a torrent of bad loans, well, which will overwhelm the banking system in the future. So I come back to the point, Mark.
Effectively, what you're saying now is...
What
you're saying now is to the central bank, do not be penny wise now and pay
absolutely
pound foolish.
We're talking
billions of euros foolish down the road.
But again, Mark, can I just say that I think at the end of this, that the European Central Bank will just pay the bill. I think it's very important also for our government, and I can see the French, Spanish, and Italian governments are saying this, right, that the spending that is incurred to save our people, to save people's lives, does not lead to austerity budgets in the next 3 or 4 years, okay? The spending that we incur now should not lead to the debt-GDP ratio of countries going up so that in the next 2 or 3 years we can't build houses and hospitals and all that sort of stuff. So this is a one-off. It behoves very imaginative thinking on the part of bankers. And one of those imaginative thinking is simply, it's called helicopter money. It's a deep, deep idea from crisis economics that the central bank just pays for everything.
Okay.
Everything. And we don't issue any debt at all. And the reason we don't issue any debt is we don't want to compromise our governance in the future because of a pandemic.
Listen, thank you for that. I sincerely hope they were listening to you. And more importantly, I sincerely hope they pay attention to you. That's David McWilliams, economist. And of course, the man behind the David McWilliams.